grad school series titled Portland's Urban Native Americans, What You Need to Know to Be an Ally. Classes will be Wednesdays at 7 at Southeast Uplift in Portland. The first class, June 10th, will focus on the context for urban natives of Portland. Current studies estimate at least 60% of Native people live off-reservation. Historically, this is no accident. Discover why it's important to understand the unique characteristics of urban Indians compared to other non-white urban populations and to their reservation counterparts. Again, that's Portland's Urban Native Americans, What You Need to Know to Be an Ally. Wednesdays at 7 at Southeast Uplift, 3534 Southeast Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Kick me one of them funky ass beats.
Tune in Thursday, June 19th at 10 p.m. for a special live remote broadcast from What the Festival at the Wolf Run Ranch. We'll be showcasing the musical and visual artists at this year's festival with interviews, music, and interactions with the producers and participants, exploring what makes this such a uniquely immersive, entertaining, and intimate festival. Again, be sure to tune in at 10 p.m. Thursday, June 19th for our What the Festival broadcast here on KBOO Community Radio. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 7 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's KBOO's weekly broadcast of The River Signal. This is episode 2.
Sisters in the kitchen got away with medicine. Stir around and boil it up and cool it down again. Mama's a teacher, a sister takes the lead. She knows about the golden taste of Mississippi seeds.
The River Signal, Episode 2, The Howl.
A long dash following 10 seconds of silence.
5 days in the sky turned dark air.
Okay, everybody. Katie Rocket here with your daily unsolicited traffic report. This morning, it's pretty quiet up in the Crow Wing. The current's piddly. The wind's... But the trading scows are out in full force. I can see two of them pulling through the tails. Oh, but yesterday, geez, in case you weren't listening, right at the end of my hour, three guys slammed their broken down paddle wheeler into the trailer. At first, I was a little huffy because, you know, I just polished my trailer. But then they told me that their boat didn't even have an engine. They'd gotten dragged into me by one of those mega carp. So I told him I'd forgive the dents and the scuffs as long as they gave little Herbie a bath. Which they did. And let me tell you, whew, you've never seen a cleaner poogle. Well, those guys need to get their engine fixed. So this morning I gave them some muck poles and pointed them toward the UV-746.
Speaking of, Spurgy, you should expect some visitors this evening. And everyone else, if you see those three gangly goofballs pulling a dead paddle wheeler towards Spurgy's marsh, maybe give them a hand? They seem like real good peaches. I mean, they take themselves awful serious, and they don't exactly smell so great. And that reminds me, guys, if you're listening, I slipped a bar of that maple tar soap in your wheelhouse, and I'd recommend using it. Starting with your feet.
For some time now, we've been pulling this paddle wheeler through thick cattails and thicker fog. Kitty said it was just a couple miles to the scrap boat, but I'm starting to think she might be one of those folks who say a couple when she really means 12. Usually I'm not the one to rush. I like to spend my days floating and fishing and playing the banjo. But the carp ate my banjo. Ain't my best rod, too. And even if it hadn't, I'd be inclined to move on from this marsh. I don't care for it. It's too shallow and weedy to fish, and the fog tastes sour. I can't help but think of the thing Mom always said. Sour places attract sour people. Huckinsoe? He likes the mist. Standing on the port side gunwale, eyes closed, taking big, long breaths as he dips his pole into the muck. He thinks it tastes sweet, says it's the one thing out here that reminds him of home. The envoy is on the top deck, holding the radio in one hand and the notebook in the other, probably reviewing his notes from our chat with Kitty. She didn't say anything I couldn't have told him myself. Over the years, I've heard the signal plenty of times. It's the only radio that still cuts through, and for most people out here, it's the only way to communicate, only way to know what's coming up and down the river. Huckins is looking up ahead, through the cattails, at a pair of figures bubbling from the fog. I was wondering when he'd notice them. The Venetians. They've been weaving around us all morning, keeping their distance. They don't stray too far off the main channel. They're traders, as I hear it, and they've got everything on those rafts, from crossbows to bubblegum. But it's sort of a closed system, Venetian to Venetian. They stay away from everyone else, stick to the shadow and the fog.
The marsh is quiet and calm. Those lone polars all seem to have disappeared. Maybe they sent something out there in the fog, you know, like dogs and earthquakes.
What you're using it for, kiddo? If you're just building a two-cylinder swamp buggy, I can grab together what you need from old saddles and refrigerator motors. But if you're talking something bigger, then you might be looking for a plasma damper, and those are a bit rare.
I pick up my pole and the three of us steer the boat around some grassy clumps. My arms are not happy. After all the walking, I've got quads that could deadlift a buffalo. But not so with the arms. I try and mirror the technique of those polars. I think it has to do with the hips.
I think it's kind of like the sound of a frog singing on the river, but it's mixed with some like strange buzz and this like deep kind of metallic tone that I find very unsettling.
Okay, sounds like you're actually looking for a harmonic balancer of some kind. Does it look more like an H, or is it a kind of a spiky donut?
It doesn't. It looks like a horse, or a cow.
Aha, yeah, that'd be it. Okay, here's what you're gonna need to do. I know you're stranded out there, and you're anxious to get on the road, so I'm guessing you want the short and simple.
Yes.
I'm betting that if you bolt on the plasma damper, you'll be good to go. At least get you down to the confluence where you can swap out the whole kit and caboodle. I think I have one here on the boat. If you make it your way up.
When it seems like we're in shouting distance of one of the merchant rafts, I call out to see if they know which way to the UV-746. The guy points off to the left. I'd ask him something more specific, but he looks busy, his long raft stacked high with prickled yellow fruit. Left turns out to be a good call. After just a few minutes, the UV-746 appears out of the fog. We catch sight of the bow first, almost straight above us, 30 feet up. I've never seen anything like it. It's big. Big in a thesaurus kind of way. Colossal. Humongous. Elephantine. The chain links off the anchor are almost the size of our boat. It looks like some sort of battleship, maybe, but I have no idea how it would have made it here to the shallows. Down at the water, there's an adorable little sign with a picture of a caterpillar that announces that we have arrived at the Steamboat Syndicate, home of bits, parts, junk, and unclassifiables. This looks promising, just the place to get our boat running. I turn to say so to Reed, but he's got an eye out on the fog. He looks preoccupied, and when I ask him, he tells me it's a bad omen. I assume he doesn't mean the caterpillar.
I think it's called an iron bull. Or no, an iron ram, I think. Actually, yes. Yes, that sounds right. Iron Duke.
That man, Spurgeon, he's here. Somewhere on this endless ship. This morning, Kitty told me the UV-746 was huger and rustier than I could imagine, but still I wasn't prepared. This thing's bigger than any building I've ever set foot in, even those abandoned log compounds up on the Superior shore. I stop on the stern deck and watch as Reed takes a deep whiff of those rust-freckled steam pipes. Huckins, meanwhile, is monkeying up the 40-foot mast. Show off. This room is amazing. I'm up on some lattice gangway, suspended above a cavernous chamber full of driftwood and rebar and prehistoric hunks of metal. The engine used to be down there, I guess. Now it's just a junk pile. There's a full rainbow of rust and lichen on the walls, and that drooling insulation overhead makes me wish I still had my haze mask.
I know I had one of them guys down here. I remember putting it right between the bandsaw and the
voice seems to be coming from the next room. I walk the gangway to the door and try to nudge it open, but it's a tight fit. So I lean back and throw my shoulder into it.
Well, looks like we've got a walk-in guest. Show's over anyway, and I was expecting you boys.
Spurgeon's down below me, amid a heap of cables and rusty junk, holding a headset and a microphone. He's a little old guy, wearing a grease-stained canvas onesie, and he's looking up, grinning. We take the old man down to the paddle wheeler. As he tinkers, his head buried in the boat's engine, he says his name's Ron, but everyone calls him Spurgeon or Spurgy, but never ever Spurge. And now he's laughing. Our engine's the same one he was just talking about on his show, an Iron Duke. It's got a good heart, he says. Just needs some new belts and plugs and a beefier harmonic balancer. Something called a plasma damper. Spurgeon says he just heard from someone else looking for that part, a sweet-sounding gal named Pixley. But here on the UV-746, it's first come, first serve. The part's ours, he says, as long as we've got something to trade. He looks over at the wood stove and raises his eyebrows. I happen to like that stove, but before I can say so, Huckins sticks out a hand and tells Spurgeon, "You got yourself a deal." Spurgeon doesn't waste any time. He's chest deep in that engine compartment, swinging wrenches and twisting screwdrivers and every once in a while using what looks like an electric razor. When I ask what it is, he just says, "I'll tell you when you're older." As he works, he explains that he's got a load of odds and ends stashed throughout this scrap ship. He does good business with the Venetians, trades tools and soybean solenoids for whatever goods they bring down from the territories. All the while, Huckins hovers, asking questions and taking notes. I wish I was like that. Wish I was the sort of guy who knew or cared about engines. But I'm not. I head up to the stern deck and find Reed on the gunwale, whittling driftwood into what looks like a spoon. I sit beside him. He's been awful quiet today. Quiet and worrying on something he won't quite mention. Maybe he saw the carp? Geez, I hope not. I think I've had enough of that thing for a while. Now he grabs my arm. He's pointing downriver at that wall of fog. I'm about to tell him, "Yes, Reed, I've noted the fog," when I see the woman pulling out of the mist on a thatched raft.
Sisters in the garden, in the sun and in the soil. She knows how to work it so the work is never toil. Fetch yourself some flowers, set aside the greens. seas and show me about the golden taste of Mississippi seeds. Fixing the elixir that most anybody needs. The golden taste up in your mouth is Mississippi seeds. Mississippi seeds, oh Mississippi seeds. The golden taste up in your mouth is Mississippi seeds. Sisters on the front porch holding up her old shotgun. Rabbits in the dandy's oat, the work is never done. Building up the fire, heating up the grease, and we'll wash it down with a golden taste of Mississippi sea.
It's just about the sweetest melody I've ever heard. I turn to Reed, hoping his eyes are watering too, but he looks more troubled than ever. His brow is furrowed, and he's chewing on his lip. I shrug and turn back to the water. Maybe he's just got bad taste in music. The woman floats her raft up to the dock and makes her way up the ladder. She has a sling around her neck with a collection of boxes and bottles. Her movements are slow and graceful, like she could do all this in her sleep. I'm mesmerized by her and those seeds she was singing about. I'm not sure I understand what they are, but I think I want some. Spurgeon has climbed out of our boat and walked up to greet her on the dock. When she introduces herself,
Pixley Fink.
Spurgeon drops his eyes and clears his throat. He breaks the news. Tells her we came along just after her call and needed that plasma damper and, well, first come, first serve. It could just be the angle I'm looking from, but for a second, her eyes seem to flash. Like actually flash from pale blue to black and back again. But then she just smiles and says, it's no worry. She's been pulling with no engine a while now, and she can wait a bit longer.
Spurgeon is turned in for the night. He says there's a good chance we could start up the engine tomorrow. Just give that mystery oil some time to make it down into the block. He says we'll run it in the morning. I'm covered in oil and copper flakes. Climbing back up to the steamship, I can see that Pixley has lit a fire out of one of those towering vents. She's set up some jugs around her and has several pots over the flame, giving off a distinctly non-food smell. She hasn't seen me, she's just watching over the pots and playing guitar.
There's a riverbed between us and a rain that just won't fall. And the breath we breathe that lets us say nothing at all. Oh, meet me by the water, my silent animal. When I come naturally to you, when you come naturally to me. There's more to life than us two, than the known and the absurd. So we'll never cease to listen when we don't know the words. And I'll take you by the eyes. Yeah, I love you where it hurts. When I come naturally to you. When you come naturally to me. I won't set the ship a-sailing. Made a clamor and shove all our hopes inside it, for the love can't even begin. Cause when we know it all by heart, and then the knowing lets us in. When I come naturally to you, when you come naturally to me. When I come naturally to you, when you.
The envoy and Reed come up from below decks. When Pixley Fink has finished playing, we walk into the light and awkwardly say hi. She shows us some of the tinctures she has on the fire. Reed samples them one by one. St. John's wort, pinkberry, and yamstock. Pixley tells us she runs a remedy racket all the way up to Duluth. Says she's the best in the business for minor headaches and kidney failure. And I believe her. Reed has made his way around the fire and picks up a bottle off the deck. The label just says seeds. That's the good stuff, Pixley tells him. You be careful with that. I pick up the bottle from Reed and look it over. I pop the cork and it smells pretty wild, like vanilla bean and paint thinner. Suddenly I want to try it, need to try it. The envoy's got a bottle too and he's squinting through it at the liquid. Go ahead, she says, and I tilt the bottle back and sip a little of the thick golden syrup. It's tough to swallow. It tastes medicinal, the way I remember liquor tasting when I first tried it. Like it was bad, but important. The seeds taste important. We pass around a bottle, not talking, as Pixley plays her guitar.
More than we could make, more than we could.
I'm watching Pixley play and I'm looking at the bottle. There's a cartoon drawing of a horse, and as I watch it, it seems to move a little. Its hooves start to flicker forward and backward like watching a flip book. The patter of hooves is making me drowsy, like rain on a roof at night. When I look up, I can see that Reed has fallen asleep and the envoy is leaning down into one of the steam vents, humming to himself. My vision is getting a little blurry now, but I look over and I see a huge gray horse on the deck of the boat, not moving. I'm struggling to keep my eyes open. I try and remember what a horse is supposed to mean in a dream. I think maybe it's passion, or perseverance, or maybe transportation.
Get up, boys. Come on, we gotta go now.
When I open my eyes, the first thing I see is Spurgeon, frowning down at me. There's a swimming feeling between my temples. Not quite a headache, more of a pleasant nausea. Everything seems wavy. My thoughts, my legs, Spurgeon's frown. He steps over me, places one boot on Huckins' chest and the other on the envoy's back, and proceeds to do this surprisingly nimble hip shake while saying, "Up, up, up, up!" Still standing on the guys, he pulls paper from his pocket and hands it over. It's a short letter written in thick blue ink.
Sorry about the seeds. They do that sometimes. I had to borrow the damper, too. You'll have it back, I promise. But now there's somewhere I gotta be. Someone's waiting for me. See you downriver, I hope. Pixley.
I stumble over the gunwale and look down at our boat. Sure enough, the engine cover is open. The plasma damper, that part Spurgeon spent hours installing, it's gone. I turn back and start to tell him, but he's shaking his head, cutting me off. The damper's no big deal, he says. Another one will turn up. It's the storm he's worried about. Clouds are rolling up from the south. They're like none I've ever seen. Gauzy gray puffballs with jagged yellow spires. They seem to be zigzagging across the sky, or maybe that's just me. I'm still feeling pretty woozy. Spurgeon keeps mumbling about how he feels the storm in his knees, in his elbow pits. Then he licks his finger and rubs his teeth. Yep, he says, this one's gonna be a real fern burner. Huckins and the envoy are finally struggling to their feet. Their eyes are clouded, and I imagine mine are too. I'm about to turn to ask Spurgeon where we ought to hole up, but then I hear him say, well, you coming or not? He's on the ladder, heading down to the portside dock. I look up at those razor puff clouds and back down at him. He's really going out in this? She's not old enough to know what she's staring up, he says. And neither are you little peppers. But I don't have time to explain all that. I just need you to get in the Panzer.
So
Somehow, Spurgeon's mounted the body of an old army tank atop two steampipe pontoons. I can't believe I didn't notice this thing yesterday. Actually, I'm not sure it was even out here. I'm kind of wondering if the guy just built it this morning. Now Spurgeon's waving at us from the tank hatch. I don't really want to get in there. The storm looks gnarly, and I'm not quite sold on saving this gal who stole our stuff and gave me the brain melts. But Reed and Huckins are already climbing aboard, and I can't stomach being seen as the baby of the bunch. So I clamber up the tank treads and join him in the cockpit. We take off faster than I expected, faster than I thought possible, and I wipe out, again, smack my head on what might be a potato gun. This is bad, Spurgeon's saying. The Venetians are fading off, disappearing. He starts barking numbers at Huckins, and Huckins tweaks the radio dial, or at least tries to. The boat's swerving wildly now. Either we're going real fast, or Spurgeon's just an awful pilot. Reed's hogging the periscope, but I manage to elbow him out of the way for a second, get a look. Those spiky clouds are still swirling overhead, but the water, it's eerily still. Suddenly, Spurgeon throws the drive in reverse, and the Panzer shudders to a halt. He's got headphones on now, and his eyes are closed. He's nodding, pointing up at the hatch door. Huckins and Reed climb up and out the hatch, and I'm right behind them, sticking my head up into the fresh air, except that it's not fresh, it's sour.
You talk about weather, about waves. You talk about all you can't explain.
She's out there, somewhere in the fog.
There are things,
but we can't see her yet.
Explain.
I hear Spurgeon say, "Not that song."
You think you found a better place.
He's poked up out of the hatch. His head is now between my kneecaps. It occurs to me that we're traveling awful fast through the fog and careening toward a crumbling dock, and that no one's driving. Spurgeon seems to realize this too. He drops back down into the cockpit, and a second later, the tank veers back into the channel. Now Spurgeon's really pushing the Panzer hard, and the voice is getting clearer. Huckins is peering through the fog with cracked binoculars, and Reed is down on the treads, holding his face just above the water, like he's gonna pick up her scent or something. I don't know, maybe he can. It's kinda hard to know with river folk.
Yes, it'll howl and swallow you gone. Said it'll howl and swallow you gone.
Okay, there. I see her. Up ahead, faintly in the fog. She's on a raft, playing that guitar, and sitting on a pile of blankets. I poke my head down the hatch to tell Spurgeon. The noise coming through the speakers is terrible, and I almost feel like I can hear it coming from beyond the radio. A shadow slides across the water. I spin around and see a wave like a cliff face, like a yawning mouth. We're riding up it, angling steeper and steeper, and I fall back and smash my tailbone on the metal edge of the hatch. I manage to lock my legs into the ladder rungs, which is good, because now here comes Huckins, tumbling past me. I reach out and catch his arm, barely. We're at the crest of the wave, impossibly high up. For a second, I think I see the steamship in the distance. It's below us. Suddenly, we're falling. My gut's tickling my teeth, and someone's screaming. Maybe Reed, maybe me. My legs are still wrapped in the ladder rungs, but my torso's bent backward across the tank deck. I see Reed now, down on the treads. He's heaving and soaked, but he managed to hang on. We all did. I let go of Huckins' arm and I sit back up. The wave, it's gone. In the water before us, I see only cattails and the reflection of the soft pink clouds overhead, in a lone raft, carrying one blanketed heap, one guitar, and no Pixley. The River Signal was written and recorded by Galen Huckins, Brian Benson, and Reed Lustig. This week's episode featured music by Elizabeth Pixley Fink and the voices of Ron Spurgeon and Kitty Rocket. Audio mixing by Joel Shupak and editing by Brian Huckins and Shani Aviram. Special thanks to Ear Trumpet Labs for the Myrtle microphone we used to record this episode, and to KABU 90.7. You can find pictures and video from the voyage of the Channel Princess, as well as the complete session with Elizabeth Pixley Fink, recorded on the bow of the riverboat, at riversignal.com. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for episode 3.
And you are listening to The River Signal here on KBOO Portland. Tune in every Monday night at 7 to hear a new episode. We continue now with this week's Riverboat Sessions.
The Riverboat Sessions. Tonight I'm meeting up with Elizabeth Pixley Fink, a singer-songwriter in Portland, Oregon. We met a while back, broadcasting radio from the UV-746 tugboat. Elizabeth came to a syndicate meeting with a guitar and convinced everyone to do a show about the Big Rock Candy Mountain so that she could sing the song. We did, and it sounded great. Elizabeth and I take a canoe out down the Willamette, passing by the old Linton plywood factory and the chemical plants along the water. It's warm, but dark patches of sky send short bursts of rain down on us. Benson is out, and Reed is up on the hill working with Spurgeon on a transmission, so it's just the two of us.
I had this weird dream about my friend, and she had this, like, special medicine called Mississippi Seeds. It was this golden liquid, and she told me that I should take it. I don't understand why. She was just pouring golden liquid down my throat and telling me it was Mississippi seeds and that I should take it because it was good for me. And so I wrote this song about it. Okay. Sisters in the kitchen got away with medicine. Stir around and boil it up and cool it down again. Mama's a teacher and a sister takes the lead. She knows about the golden taste of Mississippi seeds. Fixing the elixir that most anybody needs. The golden taste up in your mouth is Mississippi seeds. Mississippi seeds, oh Mississippi seeds. The golden taste up in your mouth is Mississippi seeds. Sisters in the garden, in the sun and in the soil. She knows how to work it so the work is never toil. Fetch us up some flowers, set aside the greens, and show me about the golden taste of Mississippi seeds. Fixing the elixir that most anybody needs. The golden taste up in your mouth is Mississippi seeds. Mississippi seeds, oh Mississippi seeds. The golden taste up in your mouth is Mississippi seeds. Sisters on the front porch holding up her old shotgun. Rabbits in the dandy's oat, the work is never done. Building up the fire, heating up the grease, and we'll wash it down with the golden taste of Mississippi seeds. Fixing the elixir that most anybody needs. The golden taste up in your mouth is Mississippi seeds. Mississippi seeds, oh Mississippi seeds. The golden taste up in your mouth is Mississippi seeds. Sisters round the fire listening to the elders spin the tales of old they were told when they were only kids. Full moon's arising, you can feel the southern breeze. It's blowing as it's sowing all the Mississippi seeds. Fixing the elixir that most anybody needs. The golden taste up in your mouth is Mississippi seeds. Mississippi seeds, oh Mississippi seeds. The golden taste up in your mouth is Mississippi seeds. Sisters in the forest, oh, the sun is going down. She knows how to move around without making a sound.
Is she all alone there lying in the weeds? Well, you know who loves the golden taste of Mississippi seeds. Fixing the elixir that most anybody needs. The golden taste of in your mouth is Mississippi seeds. Mississippi seeds, oh Mississippi seeds. The golden taste of in your mouth is Mississippi seeds. The golden taste of in your mouth is Mississippi seeds.
I used to drive to Iowa every year with my family, and we had to cross the Mississippi every time. It was big. It took a while to cross it. It was like it was a landmark on the journey, and we would all sing Mississippi song. M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I. Yeah, M-I-S-S-I. I mean, the song my dad made, at least. There was like different things you had to sing along the journey to mark your where you were. Like once we like got into like Cedar Falls, you could see the Unidome and you had to go, I can see the Unidome. And there was like a song to sing when you got to the lake. Look at the lake, look at the lake, look at the lake. They're all very simple.
We
Place is directly related to songs and like eras of songs. I even when I'm singing, I often have images in my head of where I was and like the land that created the song or the time of my life. And sometimes even singing songs from a different time is kind of funny. So like Red Clover is from like a time in my life when I was spending a lot of time outside. I was living in Massachusetts and I'm from Michigan, so when I was living there, I was like kind of idealizing Michigan in this way. So I would throw in stuff there, you know, so like you can leave a place and it has this idealized imprint in your mind.
Carry it all behind you. Where are
From where the Channel Princess sits, you can see Pier 4 and the big car ships coming in from the Columbia. The cars drive off by the hundreds, straight onto the train cars lined up along the water. Here at the yard, you can hear the trains being built at night, going forward and backward, and the cars slamming together.
I've toured in the Midwest and the East, and in Mexico. Well, my longest tour was a 2-month tour. I guess that extended into a 5-month tour, because then I just moved to Mexico for a while. We took all public transportation. So I had my keyboard and a backpack case on my back, and I wheeled around this tiny Kalamazoo guitar practice amp in a wheelie bag, and then we stuffed all our clothes around our instruments. And we went on the train and hitchhiking. I think it's really cool to also only go to places the trains go to in the Midwest, because you see like the whole history of like what was once the rail line and these towns that just, you know, built themselves up so quickly with like all these huge stone buildings. And now they're kind of ghostly. Here and now. You like it? Here and now is your one true home. Here and now is where you belong. And singing sweet inside your chest are the little birds of happiness. For when the wind blows cold underneath your door and your window seams north facing, resting there and all the times apart. Oh, your happy home is your one true heart. Inside your heart is your one true home. Inside your heart is where you belong, singing sweet. Are the little birds of happiness singing sweet inside your chest? Are the little birds of happiness? To be, when I wrote songs, I felt like I actually had to remain truthful, like autobiographically, to whatever the original kernel of song inspiration was. My songs were me more, and now I feel like I'm just like playing music more. My songs are just less complicated. Like Welcome to the Rain has like 3 full, really wordy verses, and Rosalie has like 2 verses that are really repetitive. I don't know, sometimes you write a song and like you're done, you know? You wrote a chorus and a verse, and that's really all that needs to be said about that topic. Just like repeat a couple things. There's a riverbed between us and a rain that just won't fall, and the breath we breathe that lets us say nothing. Oh, meet me by the water, my silent animal. When I come naturally to you, when you come naturally to me. There's more to life than us two, than the known and the absurd. So we'll never cease to listen when we don't know. Set the ship a sailing, made a clamor and a din. Shove all our hopes inside it, for the love can't even begin. Cause when we know it all by heart, and then the knowing lets us in. When I come naturally to you, when you I think I'm going to sing you my friend's song about Huck Finn.
Alright, good.
I'm just going to sing it a cappella. Okay. This is a song by Andrew Beams. When I was 13, all my friends made fun of me, cause I wore knickers instead of jeans, just like Huck Finn. I used to smoke a corn cob pipe. I would smoke it late at night. Never got in trouble cause it turned out the light, just like Huck Finn. And I just wanna go down the river with you forever, babe. I just wanna go down the river with you. I just wanna go down the river with you forever, babe. I just wanna go down the river with you. And when I am 63, will you still be with me? Going down the river, just you and I, till the day we die. I just wanna go down the river with you forever, babe. I just wanna go down the river with you. Mm-hmm. That's all I got.
The Riverboat Sessions this week feature the music of Elizabeth Pixley Fink. You can find out more about ElizabethPixleyFink.com. The Riverboat Sessions is recorded and produced from the deck of the Channel Princess Riverboat on a trip down the Mississippi. You can see pictures and video from our sessions at riversignal.com, where you can hear our original radio story featuring the performers recorded in these sessions.
And that'll do it for the River Signal this week on KBOO Portland. Tune in next week at 7 p.m. on Monday for episode 3. And stay tuned for A Different Nature coming up at the top of the hour.
KBOO is having a contingent in the Pride Parade, and we would love it if you would join us.
Please let us know if we can count on you to walk with us in the Pride Parade, Sunday, June 14th.
We will be meeting at 10 a.m. in the area around the North Park blocks.
Join us, wave at people, be fabulous, be KBOO.
The parade steps off promptly at 11, and all contingent members are to be together and ready by 10:30 a.m.
Please join us for a wonderful, fun, and lively day at the Pride Parade.
Call 503-231-803 and ask for Ani at extension 213 for more information.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Nepal Aid Concert, Saturday, June 20th at 7 p.m. at 4200 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. The event will feature live music by Manda and the Latin Sound Trio, poetry by Alex Dang, Nepali dance performances and lessons, and more. Again, that's the Nepal Aid Concert, Saturday, June 20th, 7 p.m. at 4200 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And the time is exactly 8 o'clock, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Aladdin Theater, presenting an evening with Jonathan Richman, Tuesday, June 9th. Doors open at 7, show at 8, and tickets and information for Jonathan Richman are available at aladdin-theater.com. And also, Moon Alice performing with the David Nelson Band, Friday, June 12th at the Alhambra Theater in Portland. Poster by Gary Houston. Information at moonalice.com, and tickets are available at alhambrapdx.com or at the door.
You are about to cross the border.